Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Had Hot Pockets for lunch, getting ready to have a beer here in a couple hours. It is a Fri-yay with the Playmakers, Paul Eihander and Lindsey Brown.
Should emphasize that just a tad bit more.
Fri-yay.
Yeah, there we go. Like I said, you want to make it sound like a sound effect, and life is better with sound effects. That's just the motto.
It's just an emphasis on the syllable.
Not the wrong emphasis. You don't want to do that on the incorrect syllable.
Right. So autocorrect, and the English language befuddled many people in terms of communication these days.
Yes, that is 100% correct. But at least you know when the pockets are hot, right? Was that a very delicious lunch for you? What else was ahead?
Self quarantined lunch is what it was. Tonight is make your own pizza night in the house. So,
I like that. Listen, that's fun.
Well, listen, we didn't hoard the yeast and the flour like many people did. We still have some in our house, and we're actually baking with it. But we are running short. So for those of you who are sitting on 8 pounds of yeast and 180 pounds of flour, if you want to spare a little, just drop it by the station. We'll make sure it gets put to good use.
Yeah, or, start that cupcake bakery that you were going to pop right up in about 2 seconds anyways.
Yeah,
do something with it.
Yeah, me and two broke girls, we're going to open up a cupcake shop. That's not probably the best route of action, so to speak.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I got the call from the school today, too, basically telling me nothing new.
I don't understand.
Was not excited about that one.
But then again, I'm sure it's not like they're not continued to be inundated with calls. Like, I'm sure people are just like, oh, we'll just let you guys be now. Like, I'm sure it's more of an update to respond to.
I think a lot of folks in Southern Nevada, got kids in school, whether it's grade school like I do or middle school or high school or whatever it is, their kids' stuff is still sitting in these schools, and, everyone's kind of eager to get back in.
That's true.
We're all trying to be patient about it. There's no doubt about it.
But
still, my kid's got a library book, and we've been lamenting the fact that, listen, we probably checked out probably one of the worst books in the library to, be holding on to. We just want to get it back.
Is it one of those expensive ones?
No, it's not an expensive book. It's just, it's not the most, intellectually sound book. Once you've read it, the 12 pages that
it
consists of.
It's not an expansive storyline, you're saying? Your page count is a little thin there?
There is no T.S. Eliot involved in this one. Let's put it that way.
One time, I think we checked out a library book when I was younger, and then we went back to the same library years later. They still charge me a late fee, and I think we went back a decade later for the book that we had lost on the North Shore in Minnesota the decade before. Those people keep it on the record forever. But I love libraries. The studious.
Libraries are the
I
best.
Love that. I love it.
I wish the libraries would reopen soon. I mean, social distancing, I get it. It sucks, but man, it's
plus they're fun places for the kiddos. They got fun things.
We got some good libraries in Clark County, and I've got the Golden Knights library card, as I think I've mentioned before on the show.
They would have library cards. Wow.
Well, of course. Well, the Raiders will have theirs too. The Raiders will have theirs too, and we'll have the.
If there's advertising space, they will come.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's get you the five biggest stories of the afternoon.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Number one.
All right, so as we talk about the Raiders and the Vegas Golden Knights kind of had the stranglehold on this when it came to demand for tickets. But now, apparently, it's the Raiders. Reports all over the place, and now SeatGeek confirms the interest in the Raiders, talking about ticket sales, saying in the first 12 hours of the schedule release, the Raiders have been the most in-demand ticket in the NFL, with the average ticket is selling for $587. $587.
Oh, my Atlanta, that's a lot of allowance money, Paul.
Yeah, the second highest demand game in terms of sales so far. The Raiders hosting the Saints. So that's that Monday night kind of first game ever.
The first game.
Yep, I get that one. Yeah, I get that one. And then there, and it only trails the Cowboys at the Rams night game the week before, which is that Sunday night opener at the new L.A. stadium. Mm. So people want to be there for the new ones. And then what we had expected, I think I could trace the lines here. Basically, Buffalo fans want to come to Las Vegas in the worst way. So,
oh, no way. Raiders, I am shocked.
I know. The Bills-Raiders game. Fourth most in demand game of the NFL season, October 4th. And the Bucks-Raiders game, that one, which, you know, it's Tom Brady from Tampa Bay, comes in at number 9. So it's very clear that the this was not a surprise, but I think everybody that was kind of a denier now can't deny it anymore, that once the NFL came to town, they were going to take over this spot. And so getting into these games, getting into a Raiders game or getting into a Golden Knights game now, will become the new experience, so to speak. You know, that this is what professional sports does. And if they can get the price, they will take it.
Absolutely. And it's just going to become as big of a thing, like you said, when your team visits here, if you happen to be a fan of a different, you know, city's team, that's going to be a big deal. Or people are just going to be in Vegas looking for tickets because, like you said, Paul, it's just going to be one of those experiences. And I hope that the Raiders, I know that you can't copy the Golden Knights, and I know that you don't want to try too hard because it's a very organic process, but I hope that the Raiders kind of embrace a little bit of the goofy Las Vegas side and just with some tongue-in-cheekness, maybe some pettiness, a little, not too much, but like I said, you have to let it organically kind of create, but I think that plays really well here, clear with the Golden Knights, but either way, it's going to be a hot ticket, and those prices are not going to stay that low. They're going to go up. Did you see some of the pictures on Twitter, Paul, where they were seeing like $1,200 for a ticket? I know that that's probably not that much, but to me, that's a crazy amount of money for a football game.
Oh, no, considering I've gone to games in the last couple of years in Arizona and other locations where legitimately a couple of pair of tickets is under $200. You know, you're getting good seats. I mean, if you're talking about getting into Allegiant Stadium,
you're not getting the bleeds, right?
Right. For $500, I mean, that's already a steep price no matter what you're looking at. So,
I'm excited. I'm excited. Yeah.
Number 2.
Your wallet's not, though.
No. Retweet. RIP.
The NHL season obviously suspended like many others in the middle of March, and there have been a number of ideas about restarts. The NBA, obviously, the Major League Baseball is looking to put a plan together here pretty soon. We're starting to see details of that. But the NHL has talked about hub cities, so to speak. And so we know that Edmonton, Vancouver, and Toronto have all put in bids, so to speak, to be some of these hub cities. At least that's what we publicly know about it. But apparently not everybody's crazy about playing in one place. This echoes Major League Baseball, with Clayton Kershaw and Mike Trout both coming out saying it's not what we want to do. Goaltender of the Minnesota Wild, Devan Dubnyk, says he's not interested. Doesn't really matter at this point. He doesn't play here. Guys with kids at home are not interested in shackling up somewhere for 4 months and being away from them. I know myself personally, I'm not interested in packing up and going away for that length of time away from my family.
Yeah.
You're talking about a starting goalie.
Yeah, and I'm sure that opinion is held by other people, but I do have to say this, that Devan Dubnyk, who I'm very familiar with, obviously being from Minnesota, his wife dealt with some really serious health issues where he had to take time away from the team to kind of help to take care of the kids and the family and stuff like that. So that is very fresh in his mind when he comes out and says this. But like I said, new parents, other guys that have family members that are dealing with health issues, either virus related or not, like everybody's gonna be on a different page. And so that's for me one of the biggest hurdles is just kind of how these leagues are gonna figure out to get these players kind of united, because I don't know if everybody's gonna be on board to go, you know.
Yeah, and certainly in the NHL, as they try to figure out what's going on, and the longer they push this thing down the road, the more challenging it's going to be. We get into June, we get into July, you start bumping heads with the next season. You know, you can get all the offseason stuff done, the drafts and things like that, but, you know, if teams aren't able to come back, and certainly when the minor league system isn't able to come back as well, you start to have issues with player development, among other items.
We got to come up with the drop it date for these leagues, or at least start figuring it out. And by drop it, I mean drop whatever season they're currently in or about to start, because there has to be one for each league, right? We gotta figure this out.
It feels like it. That leads us into number three.
Number three.
Yeah, number three. It remains to be seen when or if the NBA will resume the 2019-2020 season. Is returning after a two-month layoff an actual good idea? Shaquille O'Neal said this morning on CBS Sports Radio 1140 here on the DA show. Shaquille O'Neal says, I don't think it's a good idea. We have a lot of unanswered questions. He says he hates hearing, oh, it's going to come back. What's going to come back? I want to be gone. He says, listen, I think we should just call it this year. Make sure this whole thing is behind us. Come back next year. I'm not in charge. We'll see what happens. He goes, but I think you know the old saying, better safe than sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think Shaq, other than Rafael Nadal, who came out and said as much, at least in his domain in the tennis world, of kind of the drop and move on, they're at least one step further in the progression than, like we just talked about, Dubnyk and say some of the baseball players like Trout and Harper and stuff. Everybody's on a different spot on this spectrum, and so I'm just doing that to illustrate it. But Shaq's a big name, man, to come out and say this, but especially with how much of a beating his body took over the course of his career, you got to think that just like the rest of the guys that are playing, health is not related to the virus is first and foremost, but you are really opening yourself up to injuries and stuff if you're going to expedite this process. And we've never dealt with this. They don't know how bodies are really going to respond to it, because we've never had it in this climate with these athletes and stuff. You're really going in uncharted territory, and that's a big risk.
Right. The only thing you can kind of compare it to is perhaps playing in the Olympic Games immediately coming after a season. But then you're only talking about a select set of players who are pretty much premier athletes. It's
right,
not necessarily
but they're
the
coming off
rest
the season,
of the
too. Not a dead stop. That's the bit. It's not necessarily the cool down. It's the ability to start up and then cool down, even though you haven't had a chance to train for, you know, the cool down and such a quick stop.
All right. Moving on.
Number four.
Okay, so apparently we could be losing an athletic director here in Las Vegas. The San Jose Mercury News is reporting that one of the finalists for the vacant UCLA athletic director job, which Dan Guerrero is leaving, is UNLV's Desiree Reed Francois. She is apparently maybe the preferred candidate there and near at the top of the search committee's wish list. There's also two others that were on this list, but apparently she is like one of the finalists and might make a lot of sense just based on her links to UCLA and the fact that she has a very good track record because of personal experience and just what she's gone through here in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I second that too, Paul. I don't think it's any surprise that she's not just one of the finalists, but the leading candidate, at least in the clubhouse right now. And if she's looking to move on, that's great for her and kind of to for a change, because she's done a lot to help the UNLV athletic department, obviously, the last couple of years with all the different coaching changes that they've had to make and starting a new chapter, including the Allegiant Stadium deal. Like she's done a lot and she's done a lot even in the time that I've just been here, Paul, in the short time that I have, you know, 6-7 months. And you and I bumped into her at a UNLV football game, and I was just, she is moving all the time, and I wouldn't expect anything less. But I can't imagine what the bump up would be for the UCLA program. You know what I mean? That's a different league right there.
You know, for her, she has the experience. There's no doubt about it. And basically with
very
the personnel
well
changes
qualified
she's had to make in the last couple of years, you know, football coach and two basketball coaches, as well as, you know, putting together a training facility and spearheading a move to a new stadium. She clearly has the pedigree. It would be a big loss for UNLV and a monster game for UCLA if this report holds true. But good luck to her if this is what she wants to do. Again, UCLA
I hope it's not, but good luck.
Yeah, UCLA is 7 weeks away from having to make the replacement, but could start making that decision soon. All right, moving on.
Number five.
Okay, so Bryce Harper, back in the news, talking about a couple of days ago, said he was glad he didn't end up in Houston. Now he tells a podcast through Barstool Sports that he thinks Major League Baseball players should be able to take part in the Olympics. Baseball was restored to the Olympic Games for the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, and he says we should have the big league guys there. Let them play in the Olympics. He says monetarily, it's like, hey, you know what? Major League Baseball just needs to suck it up and just shut down for a couple of weeks like the NHL. But apparently, if Team USA is recruiting, they have one Mr. Bryce Harper who would be happy to be team captain.
Yeah, I agree with him. Don't you, Paul? I share that same sentiment.
Professional baseball players, professionals in the Olympics?
Especially since it's coming back, especially because it's being held in Japan. We know about how big of an export baseball is to Asia, and just it would be such a good moment. And this is obviously the NHL is a different type of circumstance, but it's the same result. And I still have the same stance. I think for the Olympics, you should be showcasing the best and the brightest stars that your talent has to offer. And if you call yourself the league, the best league in the world, and that's your talent, those are your guys, you have a responsibility, not just as league ambassadors, but as game ambassadors, to go and put your best guys or gals on that stage to go to the game, because you never know.
I know, but here's where I differ from you on this one, because, you know, there's clearly a Team USA would be great, Team Canada would have a great baseball team, Team Puerto Rico, Team Dominican Republic. I mean, it's certainly a lot of Latin American countries would be able to form, you know, pretty awesome squads, so to speak. But what's happened since the Dream Team for basketball is that guys are opting out, like, constantly. I mean, if you would have seen the practices here last summer at Cox Pavilion when Greg Popovich is running through this team, the starting center was one of the Lopez brothers.
Right.
It wasn't, I mean, the star athletes who should have been playing in that game, Anthony Davis, came for a visit. He didn't
But they
come
also
for
have
practice.
FIBA. They have the other stuff, though, too. I get that, and I think I understand the burnout and how you said, and how there are guys filtering out, but I also think that's a generational burnout. I think in the NBA's case, or just at least in Team USA's basketball, like the LeBron James age guys, those guys, the guys that are still hanging around there, and then Steph and that kind of second layer. There hasn't been a ton of like super, super young guys that have taken a really big step in terms of being those, though, to take up the torch from LeBron. I don't know if anybody really can, but I also maybe it's just kind of a not necessarily a talent pool lacking, but I don't know. Maybe you're right. I could see it from that side too. I just think you should.
Either way, Team USA, Bryce Harper, team captain, if they decide to reverse course. Those are your five biggest stories of the afternoon. Your Checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Coming up next, your Las Vegas Raiders now have a schedule in front of them. Apparently, there is a lot of monster demand. We'll take a closer look at the Raiders' 2020 slate coming up next.
CBS Sports Radio. You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You know, you could tell it's a Friday around the Playmakers when the conversations off the air, if we were allowed to bring those to you, are just as kind of passionate as they are on the air right now, which is kind of, you know, which means it's a good day. It also means we're loose, we're lubricated.
Yeah. It's like a brain dump Friday. We should do like a segment like that. We should have like a brain dump Friday.
Yeah, I'm just letting you say segment, so just be thankful for that.
Hey, give me an inch, and I'll just take another inch. We'll get to the mile, but it's going to be inch by inch.
You know, by the way, this should come as no surprise to anybody. We talked about during the checkdown, the Raiders obviously commanding some serious scratch, or chicken, as Marshawn would say, to get into Raiders games this season in terms of demand here in Las Vegas. But take a wild stab in the dark about the one team that is seeing demand like plummet.
That's on our schedule.
Take a stab in the dark.
The Broncos.
No.
Dang it.
You're kicking way too hard.
Okay. Well, welcome to the life of Linz. I don't know, because the thing is, I think this is a pretty good, the Chargers.
No, the terms.
That's
in
what
terms
I mean.
Of,
like the LA is gonna travel. The Colts.
No. The team that the
all
team
right, well,
on.
I
if you look at the entire, if you look at the entire schedule, the team on the entire schedule, home or away.
I know the bye week. Yes.
No, it's not the bye week. It'd be the Patriots.
Wow.
Nobody wants to go see the Patriots this year.
Oh, but that's at the Patriots. Oh, so you're saying in
right.
general their ticket
general.
Prices are plummeting.
In general,
I got
their
you.
Ticket prices are falling off the planet. The Rams. The Bucks and the Raiders all having the Rams, Bucks, and the Raiders all seeing increases in terms of what it's going to take out of your pocket to go see those football games and go see those teams. Obviously because of the new stadiums and the Buccaneers, you know, pretty self-explanatory. It's all about Gronk.
Right. It'll be interesting to see kind of how the New England fan base reacts, because that dominance over that amount of time – just to have such a – I mean, even if they go 500, they're used to, you know, going deep in the playoffs or in the Super Bowl every single year, Paul. And we know what the Patriots were like before Tom Brady got there, which is very much a middling type of franchise.
Yes.
It'll be interesting to see what the support level is for these next couple seasons if they rebuild or even if they're just around 500, because I don't know if they're going to be faithful through mediocrity, but they should be.
You know, Patriots fans were getting so used to seeing Jim Nance and Tony Romo show up in Boston.
Yeah.
And now they're not even it's going to be like, you know, Bob Smith and like some guy who may have played in the 80s, like calling Patriots games this year. I mean, it'll just be like, who are these guys?
That's what I mean. It's going to be such an interesting dynamic in Boston. And I know I'm kind of a little bit biased because I went to school out in that area.
And you,
but
hate,
with,
and you hate Boston.
Well, I hate Boston sports attitudes and just the mass hole type of attitudes. I hate that. But in terms of the city, in terms of all the good things out there, I love it. And I love visiting out there because that's literally where all my friends are. But with them kind of taking a step back, the Bruins are obviously rolling, and I'm sure even if they end up washing this season, we'll be able to kind of pick up and go and restart and run it back even for another season. The Sox are kind of disgraced, you know. It's and the Celtics, what are they? They're different every single year. I'm just I feel like the winds are changing in the sports landscape, but that's what happens when such dominant cities kind of start to, you know, go to the next phase of the cycle.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So the Raiders on the clock here, Lindsay, is as we have a 2020 right now. It's we see the schedule drop in front of us in terms of interest, and we get the home game in week two, which is just kind of odd. We also have the week one kickoff on the East Coast. Again, these 10 a.m. games are, you know, for football fans, we're all used to it here in Vegas. You know, we get up early, we hit the ticket windows, you know, we're ready to put down our bets. You know, with mobile betting, it's a little simpler now, but, you know, still
right.
There's something to be
beat
said about showing something to be said about showing up at the book at 8 o'clock in the morning and putting down some money. But, you know, you don't have to do that now, but still. But when you look, hey, stop. When you look at that schedule with these early starts, you know, the 10 a.m.s too. I mean, literally the first half of the season, it's either at home, you know, literally at home in the afternoon or evening, or when you're on the road, it's early starts. Like the body clock will have to get adjusted for all these, you know, East Coast games, essentially just based on time zones. When you look at the starts, these 10 a.m. starts where the guys are going to have to kind of turn the gears over just a little bit and figure out, you know, just kind of figure out themselves before they get moving. Not so much in week one, but as you start moving through this schedule, I mean, the second half of the schedule sets up nicer, but that first half, I mean, it does take an adjustment. I mean, you've played early games before in your career, you know, between played.
Yeah, and I mean, way earlier than 10 a.m. too. It's not fun.
Right. So having to get your mindset and, you know, like you're trying to sleep and wind down. I mean, you know, again, they're professional athletes. They've got, you know, equipment and whatnot to make it happen.
But still you're dealing
it
with human problems. You're still a human being that struggles with it. And not everybody, you know, is working at 100% capacity every day where, and sleep affects that. And sleep enables everything, and everything enables sleep or disables. It's one of those fine-tuned things. And thankfully, the last few years, they've really ramped up research into, you know, how important it is and how to really maximize guys' sleep. And I know that that's more on the NBA side than it is the NFL. But regardless, it's an absolute hurdle that they're going to have to take into account, because that affects your recovery time after the game, and that's going to set you up for the rest of the week. Are you able to practice? Yes or no? And I'm not saying everybody has to practice, but those recovery, those days, I mean, it's that stuff is going to add up. Maybe it is a little bit beneficial that they have that early bye in a way, Paul.
Yeah. There's no doubt. It'll certainly, yeah, for the Raiders, it'll help them in terms of that setup and moving forward in the season. You see the tests that are coming. I just thought that was one of those unique scheduling quirks, for the team.
You have three East Coast trips in 5 weeks.
Yeah, just back and forth and back and forth, and you wonder, you know, later on, especially you look towards the end of that week 12, week 13, they come off the Sunday night game in Kansas City, and then. Having worked with the Arizona Cardinals in the past, what they would do when they would make these roadies to the East Coast, if they had a game on the East Coast followed by a couple of games in the East Coast, or if they happened to be playing close, they wouldn't come home.
Yeah,
they
would just stay at. They'd go to the next spot, find a practice facility, and basically rent it out for the week, right?
Right. They would do almost like a mini camp, like another kind of mini camp, like a little bonding kind of thing, just away from everybody. They used the Cardinals. They would use the University of West Virginia, actually.
Right.
Because at that time of the, you know, certain times of the year, they had
team building, hold the rope stuff. Yeah, no,
exactly.
Or sometimes in the NHL, you have like mom's trips or dad's trips or certain things like that. Those are really good opportunities to do that. And like you said, it's going to save some time. Now that's a very long, that's a good stretch away from the fam and to have that time difference. And if there's anything that I've learned since moving out here, that I did not really realize when I was living in Minnesota or even on the East Coast. The West Coast time difference is like so prohibitive to keeping up with family or friends that are, you know, across the rest of the country. It's tough, but I mean, it is what it is. Everybody's going to have to kind of deal with their own adversity. So it just looks different for everyone.
Yeah. Paul and Lindsay, Playmakers here on CBS Sports Radio 1140. The Raiders schedule laid out yesterday, and it's got a few quirks to it, obviously. Four games in prime time. As we mentioned yesterday, it was one of those just kind of odd plays where they had a Monday night football game along with a Monday night football game in week two, and then a month later, they had a Sunday night football game, and then a month later, they had a Sunday night football game, and then a month later, they had a Thursday night football game. Not having gone through all 32 team schedules, but you look at that just in terms of prime time, it's almost like this consistent reminder that, you know, hey, you know, first of all, we're still here.
Guess where we're hanging now? It's in Vegas, and Vegas is here.
Yeah.
Come here and watch NFL football for the first time ever.
And it's unusual to have this because, and again, they could also be part of the triple header on week 16, which would give them a little bit more exposure on the cable channels, maybe in prime time on a weekend, you know, a Saturday or Sunday night. But you look at the Miami week. This team did not reach the playoffs last year, and they have. And I get it. I mean, the NFL needs to showcase its facilities. They have to showcase SoFi in Los Angeles. Yeah. I just call it SoFi because I just think
that's how you incentivize cities and communities to build these when it's time to do so in the cities. And I don't know if there's a lot of stadiums that are going to be up for, I don't know, a new one or whatever else. But there has to be some sort of a drop off here, because I feel like we've had new stadiums open up like every 2 years at this point. But that's how you got to make sure you showcase it. Otherwise, you get teams that leave.
Yeah, it's having those here. And again, you know, in Los Angeles, they get a double opportunity, obviously, with the Rams and the Chargers. And it was the same way in New York when they opened up MetLife as well. The Jets and the Giants, you know, share that facility.
Right.
It can, you know, they get that showcase. For here, you know, it's obviously the NFL's first real look at Las Vegas in terms of just the fan base more than anything else. The novelty is there. It's Las Vegas, so there's a little bit of that showmanship.
What does game day look like in Las Vegas? What does an NFL game day feel like here?
And, you know, with it being the NFL, it's going to be, you know, that way. It's always going to have that spirit to it. You know, it will have that, you know, that game day experience. But, you know, the NFL hasn't experienced this in quite a while, where a franchise is moving into a new city. Is being established in a new city. This doesn't come around very often. So I get
the
idea.
And the stadium in the same year, too, because at least with the LA teams, they've had a couple of years to kind of settle in, whereas this is much more of a grander entrance in many ways.
Yeah, so for, you know, for them to the spotlight definitely shines in week two, mm-hmm. and then the repeated appearances. It'll be interesting to see, you know, after 2020, and obviously there's a million questions. You know, how well does the team play this year? You know, where how does the quarterback play go? You know, does the defense, you know, become a number one defense, you know, under a new coordinator? You know, these small little things, you know, all the small little answers and the small little, you know, kinks that have to be worked out in an NFL season will determine the following season. And but, you know, it's a good spotlight for the Raiders and certainly for the city initially. Obviously, we don't get the little kiss of the NFL draft that we were all expecting to have. Yeah. So we won't have that for a couple of years. But, you know, hey, welcome to the big time, kids. If you thought, you know, appearing on, you know, on Hockey Night in America or Wednesday Night Hockey on NBCSN was a thing, and you got dream shots of rabid fans and whatnot jumping up and down for goals.
Who's hanging out? Who's in town? Who's right. Who are you rubbing elbows with?
Yeah,
different type of crowd.
It is. There's definitely a huge feeling and some. It'll be some goodwill. There's no doubt about it. But looking forward to the schedule, how it lays out, and again, week one on the road, East Coast. Week two at home, Monday Night Football. It'll all be about the fans and whether or not you can get in for the price. It'll be the fans who have the deeper pockets, at least early on, for sure. Coming up next, there are a lot of things that need to be talked about an upcoming NHL season. One of them just happens to be about a lot of changes that could be happening in goal. We'll explain next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You know, one of the unusual things about working remotely for a lot of folks is, you know, having to work in the home studios and having the makeshift setups and things like that. You know, Lindsay and I cannot see each other, by the way.
No, that's why I was so excited yesterday, because the eye contact, you take that for granted. It's not just the physical presence, but there's so much unsaid communication that we have to do for the show that it's a little bit tougher this way. But we prevail.
Sure. So, but now that we're looking at, working from home yet again, it doesn't do you any good. And we're just going to peel back the velvet rope here. We just got an email from our head of IT operations in the company saying we're having some issues that could cause login issues.
For logging in to, literally, to the radios.
They're doing our jobs. We're having an issue on a Friday. Of course it's on a Friday.
Just an FYI, it all might crash and burn while you're standing upon it. Just a heads up, perhaps.
This is literally send these emails. I was at Disneyland with my kids once. I know we're going to talk hockey here, but it just reminded me of a story. Okay. I was with my son, and we went to Disneyland, and we're in California Adventure. And if you're familiar with California Adventure, it's the other theme park at Disneyland. They have two, the main park, Magic Kingdom, and then they have California Adventure, which has a bunch of kids' rides and a bunch of, you know, adult rides at the same time. And they have the mm-hmm. Cars Land there, which is where they do the Radiator Springs Cars. You know, it's literally Cars, right in front of you. It opens up in front of you. So we get in the line, and we have the little fast pass system as they have, and we get all the way to the front. Literally, we're in the boarding queue, the next people to get in the cars.
Yep.
And the whole thing shuts down.
No way.
Just collapse. It just goes silent. It's the weirdest feeling. You just kind of hear everything just kind of wind down, and then it's just eerie, and they come over the loudspeaker. Yeah, folks, you know, Radiator Springs is experiencing some technical difficulties. Just hang on. And then
that happened
at that
to me
point,
when I was driving a real car once. Oh. Fact. It's terrifying. Oh,
really?
Yeah, terrifying.
It's that
we
feeling.
Made it.
You get,
spoiler
you get
alert.
Right up to the end, and then it's just kind of, man.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You guys didn't have to get rescued or anything, right?
No, we weren't actually on the ride. We were, again, the next people to get on the ride. There were other people. I've been stuck on Disneyland rides before. I have pictures.
Terrifying.
Of it.
Exit in an orderly manner.
Space Mountain. I've seen Space Mountain in the light. It's not that impressive. I've been on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad halfway up the hill, and it stopped. But that was actually kind of fun because the stage
pictures
were pretty
amazing.
Are
any of those enclosed?
Space Mountain is. The other ones
I'm not
outdoors.
Even claustrophobic, but I think even I would be uncomfortable, especially if it's dark. You just don't know. I have the irrational fear that there's actual monsters, even though I don't know, even though I do know that that's not real, or that toys don't turn into Woody and Buzz, you know, when you leave the room. But just there's a little shred of hope in the back of my brain, Paul, that's just that's right. That's actually real. Like a shark's in a pool or something, you know, she's got a little anxiety.
Yeah.
You never know. You never know.
Speaking of those Sharks, they could be looking for a backup goalie once we move into the new season. If they decide to scrap the current 2020, the rest of left of 2020, we move on. There are a lot of teams, and including the Vegas Golden Knights, who got themselves a rental. In Robin Leonard, we were all excited about him, and then it just, we all know what happened, but Well, Marc-Andre Fleury is entrenched in that mark right now. In terms of goalies, there are roughly, and if you include Leonard in that aspect, and maybe Mike Smith of the Oilers and Miller of the Ducks, who I think could still be a number one, you roughly have right now, you have four starting jobs that'll be open, and then you have, basically, if they don't get re-signed by their teams, and then you have another four guys that are probably clear number one starters. And it's going to be strange to see, especially I look at the Blackhawks for sure, who deal Leonard. They have Crawford, right, who's unrestricted. And our good old friend Malcolm Subban is basically –
it's very puzzling goaltending strategy.
He becomes
the
number one
right now. Yeah.
He becomes the number one in Chicago.
Well, in theory, yes. And it's going to be a really interesting free agency period this year, because we're used to kind of, big time forwards hitting the market, like Taylor Hall will this summer, or like Steven Stamkos a few years ago, even though he didn't quite make it to market before re-upping with Tampa Bay. But goalies, we don't see nearly as much movement, at least not in terms of like your starting guys in the traditional sense of the starting guys, because as we've seen, and as the Golden Knights kind of switched into this mode when they went out and got Leonard, the tandem goalie style and the different, flavors that teams are utilizing for that, you're seeing more and more organizations kind of adopting that. And so it's kind of this weird mosaic of a picture in terms of what teams are looking for in terms of what they're in supplementing their goaltenders. If they're going with a heavy starter, do they have a young guy like Carter Hart in Philadelphia? Like, that they're not going to have the same strategy or the same goals in utilizing their goaltenders as the Golden Knights are. Like, they both have solid number ones, like with a bullet, but they're two different guys at two different points in their career. So you're going to have to really figure out who's going to be the best dancing partner with Marc-Andre Fleury. He didn't really get that much time to spend with Robin Leonard, because Leonard only got in between the pipes for the Knights for three games. But it's going to be tough, because if you want to go with that tandem style, you're going to, and you want a decent goaltender, and there's going to be a surplus this year as well, which is also a little bit different, you're going to have to saddle up. You're going to have to pay for it. Corey Crawford isn't going to sign for, $1.5 million. I'm not saying Golden Knights are going to go after Corey Crawford, but this is a team that has been cap strapped as well. So it's a very interesting situation. So I'm very happy to be entrenched in the middle of the goaltending world right now.
And you have, again, if you're looking for the tandem 1A, 1B, it's 31 times 2, 62, simple math. But remember, as we move into yet the season after this, we have an expansion draft coming.
Exactly.
which means that talent pool gets thinned out just a little bit, and some of the older goalies on this list, and there are some older goalies on this list, could find themselves in a position to cash in, so to speak, because again, when you add two more positions, especially across the board, and this isn't just goalie, but you're talking, across the entire, roster of a brand new team.
It's the most important one.
who is going to want to? I mean, again, as a free agent, some of these free agents, maybe I'm only signing a 1-year deal.
Right.
Maybe that's the best play for me right now, because knowing that in the following season, I'm probably going to get paid by a team that finds itself, maybe just a quality goaltender away from taking that next step.
You're exactly right, Paul. And that example is a perfect kind of summation of how singular, as I was saying, this free agency period is going to be because of the expansion draft looming. There are teams already posturing for that. And, it's not like we haven't had one recently. And there are reasons why there were rule changes, because the Golden Knights did such a good job of assembling their roster and fleecing a bunch of teams. Those general managers, a lot of them either are still in the same posts, or because the NHL just recycles, people are in different areas. Like, the ears are up, the alerts are up. And so I think you're going to see some bridge deals. And then you throw the virus thing on top of it. Like, I think even with someone like Leonard as an example, like maybe before all this happened, he was looking at maybe I could get a contract for 3 to 4 years. But now it might be more beneficial for him to go look more short term just once things get more settled, because there's just a lot up in the air right now. But it's all good for us in a way, because there's just going to be a lot of speculation, and it is going to be a true summer of the musical goaltenders. I'm excited.
Yeah. No doubt about it. NHL offseason, if it ever comes, well, it is right now. Technically, it's not. But if it ever gets here, could shape up to be a pretty interesting space to be playing in. All right, coming up next, get you daily pep talk.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Handshakes are gone, but everybody's going to turn into basically Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco when we greet each other on the street now, just forearm smashing.
Backhand, just boom. Oh my God. Seriously. We're going to have to get like funny bone protectors or something like that. There
long
could be some
sleeves.
Serious problems.
Yeah. Get those big guards that Barry Bonds used to wear at the plate.
Oh my God. The puck once, it's the worst.
We, up until this week, had been talking about how celebrities and athletes and endorsers and influencers and whatnot had all been stuck at home filming videos of themselves. We'd been doing a little daily check-in segment. Well, now that everyone's kind of being released from the self-isolation and moving outdoors, and they just opened up dog parks here in Clark County, so congratulations to you dog owners. You got a place to play again besides the apartment. We decided that, you know, sometimes we need a little bit of an uplift, especially this time of day. Some of you struggling out there, just especially with homework with the kids or just figuring out what to have for dinner tonight. So it's time for our little daily pep talk.
It is time for our pep talk, Paul. And when it comes to the pep talk, like time has we have learned man-made construction, there is no time in the internet. So we get a lot of throwback videos. So this one is coming circa 2012 from a pregame speech in front of the Georgia Tech football team by Derek Moore ahead of their game against Notre Dame. So let's run that tape. Marcus.
It has truly been an honor to know each and every one of you by name. And the privilege that I have is that I know you by name. I know your heart. I know what makes you cry. I know what makes you happy. And that is an incredible responsibility. And it is a privilege to serve you. It is. I thank God every day for the opportunity to get in my car and drive down to the Georgia Institute of Technology, not because of brick and mortar, but because of flesh and blood. And I want you to know something. The Georgia Tech football team is about flesh and blood. It's about a heartbeat that beats strong. It's about a passion that is unyielding. And I want you men to know today is your hour. It is your time. It is your moment. Go take it. Go do what you've been prepared to do. In the words of my middle school coach again, "Don't fight. You can't fight no more.
Right.
You can't fight no more. You lie down and bleed a while. You gonna get up. Fight some more. Don't you say it with me. Repeat it after me when I say it. We gonna fight?
Fight.
You can't fight no more.
You can't fight no more.
Don't lie down.
Lie down.
Bleed a while.
Bleed a while.
Don't get up.
Don't get up.
Fight some more.
Fight some more."
Great, great, great stuff. I love it. On the ground, bleed. Get up. Fight some more.
Right.
I feel like that's a pretty good encapsulation, don't you?
Did they win the game? I don't know if they won the
game. That's a great question. Let me look this up.
I don't know if they won the game, but I tell you what, you know, there are some coaches who, you know, who will write things down as they go through the week. You know, Herm Edwards actually puts note cards together at ASU. It's part of his daily routine, and he gives all his players like a mantra of the day, like, and he handwrites them down, prints them up, hands them out. There's something about that process that comes together when it comes to being able to put together a good halftime speech, a good pregame speech,
it's
a good pep talk. a good pep talk, as we like to call it. So that one felt like it felt like he had just had all this kind of bunched up inside of him, waiting for this one particular game. More than anything else, this was the one time he had to get these guys, you know, ready in the right mindset without having to go down the road of X's and O's and here's the script for the play calling in the first 10 plays of the game for the offense and the first 10 plays for the defense. He had the enthusiasm and down pat, and they bought in clearly right at the end. And I wasn't sure they were going to, because it wasn't like this rhythmic cadence kind of thing, you know, the call and answer. But he definitely got them to call an answer. So,
well, and the manner in which they kind of give the speeches too, it depends. Is the locker room the type that where everyone gets down on a knee and puts a hand on the shoulder? Is everybody sitting on a bench? Is everybody standing and putting hands up in the air? Like, that's all that stuff plays into speeches, and just like you said, that feeling that goes around it, and you need the emotion, you need kind of all these things come together, and that's what makes those special and so I've already used this term, but singular, because you can't recreate it. You could even write out the speech again, but you're never going to deliver it in that moment and have that impact, you know?
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
So many Friday feelings here on the Playmakers. Welcome back. Second hour of our voyage today. My name is Lindsay Brown, and joining me, as he does for each program in the second hour, Uncle Tony Cordasco. Dasco, what is up, my dude?
How you doing? Just, I've got some snacks, you know, and that's about it.
What kind of snacks you got?
I was knocking on, like, some crab legs before.
Weird snacks. That's an interesting... I feel like that's a little bit fancy, but you are Dasco, and you live the fancy life. You've told me about the
bad
helicopter and rides and the nightclubs.
And the bad and bougie lifestyle.
Yeah, and you know, you're the mayor. You're the unofficial mayor. So I guess I should know better at this point. Chemistry.
Hey, can I plug tomorrow morning show, please?
Well, I suppose you could plug your show instead of plugging one of your social media musings.
No, I'll do that too.
Oh,
I'll throw
of
that in there
you
as well.
You, of course. Yeah. You know what? Just because it's Friday, I'll let you double down, Dasco. I yield the floor to you.
Okay, so the Saturday Sports Beat Radio Show tomorrow morning, 8 to 9 a.m. right here on CBS Sports Radio 1140. My guest will be Kurt Bloom. He is the play-by-play voice of the Birmingham Barons. And he'll join me to talk about Michael Jordan's baseball stint with the club back in 1994.
Ooh.
Bloom was the play-by-play guy then, and he remains with the club today. And so he's got some really interesting stories. He became friends with Michael Jordan, a really cool thing. That's tomorrow, as we'll preview The Last Dance coming up
on
Sunday.
Is that what's kind of being plugged as a topic of discussion for the episodes this weekend?
Yeah, it is one of the topics. And I'm starting to believe more and more, Lindsay, that Michael just needed a break. And not he didn't go, wasn't forced out because of gambling or other theories or what have you. He just needed a break. And his dad had passed away. His dad wanted him to play baseball. So
and you know
he
what?
Needed some time.
You know what, Dasco? I honestly, and this you just brought this up, and this is the first few seconds that I've thought of this. You're probably not wrong, because if you think about it, like you said, he loses his dad. He comes off three championships. You see what the toll, his fame and everything were taking on him at that point. And I know that a lot of the documentary series that we're seeing is focusing on the latter half of that, but we're seeing so much of those early, you know, kind of risings that really built the brand of Air Jordan and him and how on he was. And so with that, and we know how ridiculously competitive he is, and that's why the gambling thing is an easy segue. But he probably, like you said, I'm going to go play baseball because that's what dad said. But that also kind of kills two birds with one stone, because I don't want to just sit around and with idle hands. I'm going to go compete in something, you know?
His dad wanted him to play. His dad wanted him to play baseball. And that was a lifelong dream. And he kind of decompressed by playing baseball. He worked at it relentlessly. And he had an opportunity to play on
the
next level.
I'm kind of sad if that's the case, that he didn't feel comfortable or that the world, I mean, in many ways, it still isn't ready for that. But it makes me sad that if he felt like he needed to take a couple years off of basketball because he was burnt out, because he wanted to do that, that he would come out and say that, or that would be more of a thing that was communicated instead of letting everything kind of fly. You know, when you don't set the record straight, the record is set for you. And right. I wish, because I think a lot of people are realizing, and we've talked about this several times, especially over the last few weeks, about how important mental health is. And sometimes that's just a decision you have to make. And if that, and I'm sure he would make it again. I'm sure he would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, Terry Francona was the manager of the team of the Barons. Just one more note. And he said that.
Oh, I didn't know by, that.
Yeah.
That's
and
crazy.
By Michael. Yeah, it is. And the current manager of the Indians. And
yeah.
Of course, Tito won the World Series in Boston. But he said
broke
that it
curse.
Reignited the passion for basketball for
yeah.
Michael Jordan by
you
playing
miss
baseball.
It.
He missed
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think it's important for kids to play a bunch of sports growing up, too, because when you're doing the same one all the time, you don't really appreciate it. You get bored of it. And that's not because it's not fun and you're not working hard and you don't appreciate the time. But, you know, we're creatures of habit, but to a fault in many ways. But there should be plenty of stuff to glean from that on Monday after the Last Dance. What is it? This Sunday and next Sunday, then we're done, I think.
And that's it. Next two Sundays.
And that's it. And that's it. Well, that was a very long portion of your Don't At Me with Uncle Dasko.
Oh, but I didn't do my at.
I know, but we have to move on, Dasko. We got to go to our four of a kind.
Real quick one. Real quick one.
No, Dasko, we got to go. We got to go. Four of a kind. And our four of a kind theme it always takes place at the top of our hour here. And because it's Mother's Day on Sunday, we are going to have a theme around mothers. So today, Dasko, our four of a kind theme is four things that you appreciate that your mom did for you, or as I call it, four de mamas. So what is one thing that you appreciate that your mom did for you?
I'd have to tell you that I think one of the things that I learned from my mom, who has recently, she recently passed, but she taught me how to be resilient. You know, I go back playing Little League Baseball, and I was on the Expos team. And the Expos were, we were an undefeated team, and we never lost. I mean, and I was on this this team with just incredible kids, you know, in the neighborhood. We went on a tear. The team was so good. We won big, like every game. I made an error in one of the games. And, you know, I was so distraught because I felt like I was letting my team down. We didn't win by 15. We won by like 10. And
right.
I went home and I cried and I started practicing, you know, taking grounders, throwing the ball, you know, up against the wall and, you know, throwing ground balls to myself, backhanding it, everything. I made an error and I felt that I really let my team down so bad. She taught me, you know, to shrug it off, get back to work and then, you know, just keep fighting and coming
yeah.
back and being resilient. And that's where I got, you know, the resiliency from.
Those sports moments are tough to when you're a kid. Those are really emotional moments, but those lessons are incredibly important. And it's good first good kickoff point here for our four of a kind, which is centered around Mother's Day. So we're going with four things that we appreciate that our moms did for us, and we're going with like a little bit more of a personal angle, at least on my end, Dasko. And one thing that I appreciate my mother for is the back scratches. I don't know what I know that everybody has like a different routine that they had with their parents when you'd kind of slow down at the end of the night when you were a kid and get ready for bed and stuff. Like there has to be a slowdown on the off ramp. At least I've learned in nanny and stuff. But she would scratch my back and that was my favorite thing in the world. And I'm not ashamed to say Dasko that I still ask sometimes if she would do it because it is just one of those things that just puts me in a really calm mindset. And obviously it feels great. And it's, she used to get her nails done with acrylic nails back in the day. And those were always the best too, unless they didn't do them 100% right. Then I would end up with cuts and stuff once in a while. But I bought back scratchers. I have like three of them on hand here at Dasko and they don't compare. They don't compare. So, I appreciate my mother, you back scratches and she knows she's feeling it right now. The feeling in the feels.
My mom, one of the things she did was she worked bingo at the church down the street. And by doing that, it helped to offset costs for us to get bussed out of the city of Newark, which was, you know, like I've told you before, I grew up in the ghetto and
for
they bussed us out of town to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, she worked bingo tirelessly to put me and my siblings through through Catholic private high school and grammar school. So that was important.
That's awesome. Bingo at church. Interesting bit. But I remember doing the kids bingo and stuff at Sunday school growing up, too. And it was a big deal. Like, that's a competition. When bingo's being played, you know, all bets are off. There are no friends. Right?
No,
or at least did I play it wrong?
At our church, too. I mean, they weren't into gambling much, were they? We used to play.
No.
We used to go there to bet on horse races that
were
already predetermined. Remember? They had these videos of horse racing. You'd bet on the horse races with money. So illegal.
Yeah. I mean, why not? It's the Sunday tradition.
Why am I
snitching?
Like Michael Jordan. I'm snitching on the Catholic
Church. That's okay.
Right,
you do the confession after. It's all good. It's all good. You just pay penance. We're talking about four things that we appreciate that our mom did for us, because it is Mother's Day on Sunday, and hopefully everyone knows that. And here's kind of your not so last second reminder. I needed that back in the day. But one thing I appreciate my mom for is I had this really bad habit in high school, Dasco, where I would just invite my friends over for dinner last minute, or I would say, oh, I'll just buy everybody McDonald's, because I don't know, I have this weird thing where I just feel like I have to pay for people. But anyways, I would often get off the ice after hockey practice. Everybody's sweaty and gross. We're all like, we're hungry and we're young, so we're just like, we're starving. We want to go. We want to go have fun. So I would give my mom like a 15-minute heads up and say, hey, guess what? Me and six of the gal pals are coming over, and you got to make the spaghetti, breadstick, salad, and cookie feast, you know, and I would just show up, and then she would just do it. Like, it would just be there, and she was always willing to drop and to back me up on that, and obviously in every other aspect of my life, but especially with that, especially with the way that I make friends and stuff, that was always a huge deal for me back in the day. So, and it's still one of my favorite meals, so much that I had it at my high school graduation. What high school graduation has pasta, Bardasco? Lindsey Brown's does. That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, no
like
pulled
that.
Pork here.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, you know, that my mom had taught me was me and my siblings not to be picky. So, again, you know, we grew up in our neighborhood, which was kind of rough and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we sat down at dinner. And I told you before, like at dinner, the TV's off. The phone ringer's off back in the day, the dial-up phone. You know, you could turn the ringer off. And it was just family time and what have you. But also as part of that, when dinner was served, if you didn't like what my mom made, you'd go hungry. You probably would go to bed hungry because that was it. No joke. You just had to, this is it. I'm making dinner. You eat the food or you don't. And it's like, oh, we're having that tonight. It's like either you eat it or don't eat.
And how many siblings did you have again, Dasco? Or do you have?
There's three others.
Three others.
In the Dasco
so four
family.
Of you. That,
yeah.
I remember having a few standoffs with my mom and my parents a few times. They're the only child, but it didn't go as well, I think, for my parents. So, but I was a very convincing young child. Very convincing. It's okay. There's no shame in that whatsoever. We're talking about
convincing or spoiled. Were you spoiled?
I think spoil's a tough term. I'll just say
okay, convincing.
Focused on. How about that? Loved, extra loved. There it is. We're talking about four things that we appreciate that our moms did for us because it is Mother's Day on Sunday. And so the next thing that I love my mom for and commend her for specifically is rubbing my frozen feet in the parking lot as I sobbed after a crack of dawn hockey practice. You know, you're getting up at 5 a.m. to get me to the rink for the 6:30 practice because guess who has to strap my goalie pads on? You do. And who has to kind of make sure that I get corralled and get focused up before practice does, because it's easy for Lindsey to get off track. Shocking. She does. But Minnesota winters, 30 below wind chill, those rinks were ridiculously cold. Sometimes it was warmer outside than it was inside. And I remember sobbing and just maybe a little dramatic, just a bit, but just being so upset of why I'm up after hockey practice, you know, just one of those meltdowns. And you know, she has to get me there, do all that stuff, watch the hockey practice, which isn't exactly, you know, a spectacle of hockey greatness at that point, and then deal with me after the fact. So, I mean, I can't imagine. I can't imagine. And that is one thing that always sticks out to me about my mother. What's your next one, Dasco?
Paciente. Be patient. be patient. I got this from my grandmother. Just be patient. And then, of course, it trickled down to my mom. You know, she took after her mom. Just be patient. My grandmother had these sausage fingers, right? And this vice where she would just grab your cheeks and it would hurt for days.
Yeah, that, I was going to say, that probably didn't feel good.
No, but she did it in a loving, caring way. Mm-hmm. If there is such a thing.
Right.
But yeah, my cheeks are still hurting.
It's like when your siblings punch you in the arm, right?
Oh, yeah. Or Indian burns.
Yeah. Oh, true. Yeah. Yeah.
Ouch.
There's a lot of little
that would teach
little
you
ways
to be patient.
Yeah. No, patience is such a, but that's such a, how do you teach patience to kids? Like, I know that there is a process
they
to it.
They drilled
just
it. They
lesson.
Drilled it in our heads. They literally drilled it into our
so
heads.
So how did they drill it in about, your head? How did they
well,
do
just,
that? Gasco?
You just need to chill out and just be patient and go sit in a corner and wait and your turn will come up and whatever it was, you know, four kids always fighting and you had better be patient about some things or else it could get out of control pretty fast.
Heads will roll. Heads will roll. We're talking about four things that we appreciate our mothers for our four of a kind today. And the last thing that I want to thank my mom for, and I think is the most important thing, is my mom was always one of those parents that I always talk about it all the time and joke about how I watched Gladiator at a really young age or SNL or Chappelle's Show when I was probably a little bit too green to be watching some of that. But she was always one of those people that didn't want to censor me or steer me away. She would sometimes, you know, take some stuff of it out. But for the most part, if I had a question, if I wanted to know about something, she was honest with me and she had a way to like not make it scary, even if it was a really scary subject, because I was a curious kid. I'm still a very curious person. Like, I like to learn, and the world is a scary place in many ways. Or movies. Like, I remember being obsessed with Titanic, and it was a double VHS set, Dasco, and she didn't want me to watch the second VHS because of the baby at the end. And so for weeks or months, I don't know, time is an illusion as we're all learning, but especially when you're a kid, I would just watch the first VHS tape. And then one day I said, Mom, I'm going to watch the second one. She said, okay. Like she knew when I was like good to take that step. And you know what I mean? And I just think that sometimes we have a tendency to kind of put our own horse blinders on or shelter, you know, kids a little bit from what's going on. But she was always ready to explain things and complex subjects and didn't talk down, you know, and that's rare when it comes to kids and stuff. Like that's just something, you know. Feel me, Dasco?
Friday feels, man.
Friday feels. Did you do all four of yours?
I always
lose count. You already did. Look at us. We're just getting so good at this. I'm just surprised.
It's chemistry. It's chemistry.
It is chemistry. We're chemists. That's what we are. Stoichiometry be damned. I did not pass that part of chemistry. It was not great. Not great at all. But one thing that is great is the fact that the NFL schedule was released yesterday. And Paul and I touched on the Raiders regular season schedule, which was released last night, along with everybody else's. But there's a few other storylines on the outside, a little more funny stuff, like social media and what other primetime matchups look best. So Dasco and I are going to get into a little bit more of the NFL schedule release on the other side of the break here on the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
And welcome back to Playmakers, 4:20 p.m. on May 8th of the year 2020. Lindsay Brown and Tony Cordasco hanging with you here until 5 o'clock p.m. And yesterday we had an elongated show because the NFL released the regular season schedule. We know the opponents ahead of time, but now we have the dates. Now we have the times. Now we have the order in which the games are going to be played in the first season of the Las Vegas Raiders in the first 8 contests at Allegiant Stadium. And there was a lot to kind of chew on yesterday and to react to. So if you missed any of that, first of all, you got to download the radio.com app if you haven't done so already. You can podcast that. Just search out The Playmakers or CBS Sports Radio. You could find that and all of our instant analysis because it was me, Dasco, and Paul. And I want to ask you, Dasco, because it's a record number of prime time games that the Raiders have on their schedule this year. They're going to be in 4 all of them are going to be at Allegiant Stadium. Am I correct so far?
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And who are the four? Who are the four primetime games on the Raiders' schedule here? Who's on that slate? Do you have that in front of
you? Do you think I have that?
Come on, Dasko. Okay, so
we know that it's the Saints. We know that it's the Chiefs.
Yep.
We know that it's Tampa Bay and mm-hmm. the Chargers. And
yes.
the Chargers?
See?
Yes.
Yep.
Do I win
Saints,
a prize?
Saints, Buccaneers, Chiefs, Chargers. Okay. And so you have two divisional matchups there, and you obviously have the Saints and the Buccaneers with Tom Brady and all that other stuff. So I wanted to ask you, if you had to pick between those four games, which primetime matchup would you most like to be in attendance for in Allegiant Stadium? Just to kind of give you further clarification, against the Saints, that's going to be a Monday night football game on September 21st at 5:15 here. On Sunday, October 25th, that'll be the Buccaneers. That'll be at 5:20 p.m., so Sunday night football. Also Sunday night football against the Chiefs on November 22nd. And then December 17th, the Chargers. That is Thursday night football. Football. Dasko, which one do you go to out of those four and why?
I really would like to see Patrick Mahomes live. I've never seen him live, and that's
really?
A marquee game
Me
against
either.
The Chiefs. You know, I think he's by far, well, him and Lamar Jackson are my two favorite quarterbacks right now in the league. I just like
you and everybody
do.
Else.
Well, but Lamar
Come on,
Jackson,
bandwagon.
Though, coming out, no, but no. But Lamar Jackson
it's
coming
okay.
out of Louisville, a lot of people were down on him and they still think that he's one dimensional. For crying out
yeah,
loud,
he was 32nd overall pick, was
and
he not?
He can, yeah, well, mm-hmm. and he can throw the ball and he can run. And I am just such a big fan of those, you know, multi-talented
quarterbacks. I'm just giving you crap, Dasko. They're excited.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so Mahomes, you know, you can get hyped over the Bucs, but the Chiefs are the benchmark, right? And Derek Carr, sooner or later, has to turn the corner. He's 2-10 in his career against the Chiefs. If he can't get that done, if he can't beat the Chiefs at some point, he's going to be one of those quarterbacks that goes away because he can't get over the hump, you know? Like, we've seen this a lot. That's the start of Thanksgiving week two. So
right.
and the Chiefs come off of a bye. The Chiefs will come off of a bye. And it'll be the second meeting between the teams. The Chiefs last year were 7-1 on the road. So I want to see.
Is that
I
good?
Just want to see the speed. I want to see the speed, and I want to see the offense, and it's going
right.
to be tough. But I also think that the Raiders by then should know what their identity is. And their identity,
oh,
do they
sure.
get quicker? Are they going to be able to play better? Will the secondary be able to withstand the offense with Watkins and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce? And I'm just intrigued with the matchup. I really am. They added
no.
more speed. They added
yeah.
more speed.
And you're
through
absolutely
the draft.
Right. It looks different on TV. That absolutely plays. You know, that hockey is the best example of a product that is better consumed in building than over the TV. And football is that to an extent, not necessarily as the whole product, but that talent, like you said, Patrick Mahomes and all the weapons that he has, that's alone worth the price of admission. And I would love to go to that game, but for me, if I had to pick a primetime game to attend,
you're going
to
say Brady
of the four. No, I actually don't want to see Tom Brady's. I mean, I would go, but it's not the one I want to go to, at least out of the four primetime matchups that the Raiders were awarded this year, the most that they've ever had, all four of them taking place at Allegiant Stadium. I want to be there week one. I want to be there week two for game one in Allegiant Stadium. And I want to see the Saints because on it. First of all, I hate the Saints. We all know this. But I understand and respect the greatness that is Drew Brees and all that he has done for the New Orleans area, for the game of football. And just he's been such a class act, I think, despite playing for not so so classy of an organization at times. But regardless, this is probably his last go around. Plus, like I said, that's your first game ever. They're gonna pull out all the stops, whatever those look like at that point. And you know, and it's just one of those tickets that you would put in a frame or something, because that's the first game. There's never gonna be a first game ever again, especially in Vegas. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's the first time here, so it's special.
Now, what if there's no fans allowed, and
know,
we are allowed to go there as media members? Are we allowed to sit wherever we want to, as long as we have
it.
Social distancing? Because
no.
I would sit in the end zone. I'd be that guy in the end zone.
I would think that if that plan played out where you, certain media members were allowed. I think if you're thinking about this optically, the NFL would say you would stay in the same press box area where it's distance and otherwise, because it just doesn't look good if you're, yeah, the media people can go in and they can, you know, sit down wherever.
I would be in the end zone. You can see me there.
Well, Dasko, you could have your can get body paint out there, and that you can be the lone black hole in the end zone. That's what you can be, Dasko. That would be hilarious. That would be good stuff. And it's going to be fun because of the slate of opponents that the Raiders have on their schedule this year. And not just because we think that the Raiders are going to do well, which I think you can find 10 wins on this schedule personally.
You said that yesterday. I'm saying 7 or 8, but yeah. No,
sure. A lot of things have to go right. But just in terms of you're playing Tampa, you're playing the Falcons, you're playing the Saints, you have that NFC South, so that's going to be a very big focal point for the NFL storylines across the season. So they're going to come up in a lot of conversation there. Obviously, the Chiefs are going to have a lot of attention this year, being defending Super Bowl champs. We faced them twice this year, so there's more conversation around that. Chargers are opening up their new stadium as well with the Rams at SoFi. There's going to be a lot of comparisons. There's going to be – I feel like some years for certain franchises, the fan base can somewhat feel forgotten in the national conversation because either your team isn't that good or it's about location or the personality of the team or what have you. But I feel like the Raiders have been victim of that a few times, at least over the course of my football watching and consuming lifetime. But I feel like this year, how are you going to go through a segment on TV when you're talking about this week's games and not mention the Raiders or have them pop up in your mind in some way, shape, or form? Because just like I said, just by association of all the implications and the big-time teams that they have, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I have a new, like, most important game, especially particularly early on. So I think that the Raiders will split the first two games. I feel like they will win at Carolina, probably lose to the Saints.
See, I have that flipped.
The third game of the season is at New England. And to me, that is the key game. After I went back and started to kind of look at every game and going in depth, to me, that's the most important game because you want to get ahead of everything. If they're 2-1, then what? They have the Chiefs coming up ahead. And I really am believing, I'm starting to believe, Lindsay, that the final game of the season against Denver, and I'm going to go on
record
right now.
That's going to be a big-time game.
That will be the game that decides the final playoff team.
There's always one divisional race that I feel like goes down to the final game or the final Sunday. There always is one or two, and when it's more than one, it's great. But I think that the AFC West is definitely one that is a strong candidate for being that tight and down to the wire. Because you're very high on the Broncos. I'm not as sold on Drew Lock yet, but you know, defense wins championships. Von Miller literally like stole the trophy and Tom Brady's soul when they were able to secure that championship a few years ago. And that's still very solid. So the turnaround is a lot less of a burden, I think, there. I'm just not completely sold. But regardless,
and they won't have now Joe Flacco until September. He had offseason surgeries, and that's the guy
he even still on the payroll with the Broncos? I thought they let him go. Oh
no, I think he is.
I guarantee he's not getting back in there.
Yeah, no, I don't think he'll be a starter, but he's a guy that can help to mentor Drew Lock or help him along.
Oh, sure, for sure. No, but it was interesting because we did the elongated show and ESPN and or the NFL Network did like a 3-hour breakdown after the fact. And I get it; we're all starved for sports content here, and it is the NFL. They would do that anyways. But in terms of the way that they did the announcement this year, instead of doing it all at once and everybody tuning into the NFL, they gave the teams permission to release the schedules to their own fan bases on an individual basis a half hour ahead of time. And some teams chose to on their social media. I stuck to Twitter last night, Dasko. I looked up every NFL team and how they kind of chose to announce this and go through it.
I know what your favorite's going to be.
I almost took exhaustive notes, but I was just like, this is what I could do this for 2 hours because I'm so fascinated by just how this media and just content and how this stuff is made. But regardless, some teams did it by a GIF thread. Some teams just did, you know, the conference call with their players.
The Giants were horrible. They just had like photos.
I mean, the Raiders were okay. They were tossing the ball to teammates out of the
video.
Frame. That's fine. For me, the number one
know.
Was the
Can
bullet.
I say it? Can I say
Go
it?
Go ahead. Go. You
the
think.
Jaguars.
The Jaguars,
by far.
It was the bullet because Desco,
OMG.
They went with the cat video theme. Jaguars makes total sense. But the attention to detail, Dasko, because every single
I watched that like six times.
Yeah, I've watched it more. Every single little clip is a different cat video. And we all know, even if you don't like cats, like there are certain things that you expect from cats and that are funny. It's just, it's meme culture. There are inside jokes about it. But they matched up, like, if the Vikings are on the Jaguars schedule. They had a cat tackling a toddler in the snow in a snowsuit and body slamming to the ground. When they had the Bengals, they had two cats that froze in combat, and then the cat that looks more like a jaguar just ever so slightly touches the orange-looking one, and that one falls to the ground.
Falls backwards.
There was an inside line.
Where'd they get that footage from?
It was phenomenal. The internet, Dasko. For people that have spent a lot of time in the internet or grown up in it like I have, we have all seen these videos. Everybody kind of shares the same ones. But
you saw the cats
level.
On the turntable?
Yes, because they're these GIFs, they're these little mini things that have existed on the internet for years. But that's where the meme called, that's like next level, because they're matching up clever cat videos that are specific to their opponents. Like that's the brilliance of it. And so I really enjoyed theirs. I thought the Baltimore Ravens, although it looks like an acid trip, or whoever made it was kind of maybe having a couple of cocktails making it, but it has a banger of a soundtrack. I thought that one was cool.
Do you see the Eagles?
The Eagles one is weird. It was a little bit too much scatter.
Okay, it was scattered, but they have like the mascots on the iPad. They show TV clips for each team.
They're pretending to
versus,
do the streaming services,
versus,
which a lot of teams
versus
did.
The Bengals. Versus the Bengals, they have the song from the Tiger King. Dave Chappelle on a clip for San Francisco for the Niners. The Wire for the Ravens. When they get to the Cowboys, it just has a graphic on the screen that says, "This bandwagon is full. We recommend switching devices."
Right. No, there's like little petty messages.
That was good
shade. They're like the Falcons did theirs, and whenever they had the Saints on the schedule, they had like the crying toddler who's melting down on the floor, and that's where you can really see which teams are really going after the content creation and having that presence. And then you have teams that just kind of wanted to go after it and then swung and missed, like the 49ers in my book. They went with an extremely highbrow parody of the Westworld opening sequence where it's like a 3D printer and very ominous string quartet music in the background. And it was like 3D printing all of these objects that represented who they were playing. Like it was a Patriots hat for the Pats, or it was a Seahawk for like an actual hawk for the Seahawks. But there was one that looked like a jester. I was like, I have to look this up because there was no words. It was just the music and the weird shapes and stuff. I'm like, this is so odd. What a weird thing for the 49ers to do. But I suppose
what was it?
Just go watch it. Go watch it. You'll
understand. But you never did you interpret what the jester meant?
I can't even remember what it is because I was so confused. No, it was the Saints. It was a jester.
About...
I'm like, I get it, but that's so obscure.
Okay.
It's so obscure. Yeah.
What about the Patriots? Did you see the Patriots?
Yeah.
They do a Zoom call. It was bad.
Yeah.
It was one of the worst
ones.
There's
a few teams that just do the live reaction shows and stuff like that. Not everybody made videos, you know.
All they did was they had Belichick's dog sitting in his seat. And then they start this Zoom stream. And so when the Raiders' turn comes on the schedule, they have John Gruden and Mike Mayock. It says that they've entered the room, and that's who the opponent is. It was so bad. It was really bad.
I'm even bearing the lead too, because I tweeted about the Carolina Panthers at one that I thought was actually pretty well done, and they actually tweeted back at me too. And I encourage everybody, if you don't have Twitter, and even if you don't want to tweet, you should get one just to like keep track of things and to see how what people kind of put out there. But everybody, if you're interested in how like people are creative and how like social media and these TikToks and all these things, what this culture is, go look at these videos, go see what teams are doing, and you might become a fan of some colors that you didn't think that you would have otherwise. All right, Dasko, good stuff. We are going to move on, and on the other side of the break, we are going to switch gears to not The Last Dance, but what it's inspiring, and that's a whole new line of, or at least the opening of the ESPN vault, because there's going to be an upcoming E60 film centered around Roy Halladay. We're going to get into that next, right here on The Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found The Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
And welcome back to The Playmakers. Lindsey Brown and Tony Cordasco hanging here with you guys until 5 p.m. before the weekend, but we will be back here Monday, 3 to 5 p.m., just like we are here each and every weekday. But before then, before Monday, we have Sunday. And Sunday has basically been Last Dance Central for these last few weeks. And the ratings have been bonkers for the Last Dance documentary series centered around Michael Jordan and the 1997-1998 Bulls. And there are a lot of things that play into that. But regardless, the success is launching some other projects, or at least some other ideas for ESPN, because now we're seeing a lot more documentaries are going to be coming out. And one of the documentaries that was released, or at least the trailer was yesterday, an E60 film that's going to be coming out in May here on the 29th, is centered around Roy Halladay. It's titled Imperfect, The Roy Halladay Story. We'll get into Roy with Dasko on the other side of this, but we're going to play you the trailer because I think this is going to be a fascinating story. And we all know that tragically he passed away in 2017 when he died in a plane crash. He was a pilot. He was at the age of 40 and one of the most dominant pitchers that graced baseball in the last 20-30 years. So we're going to play the trailer here for you guys, and then we'll discuss afterwards. So Marcus, let's run that tape.
Everybody on their feet. Halladay's got his sides. The 1-2 pitch. Hit toward third. Castro has it. Spins. Fires. A perfect game. Roy Halladay has thrown the second perfect game in Philadelphia Phillies history.
What comes to mind when I say the word perfect?
Unrealistic expectation. I don't think there's such a thing as perfect.
There's a few pitchers that you can think about that you have this supreme respect for. He was the epitome of what a perfect pitcher should look like.
One of the greatest pitchers of his time. This absolutely stoic warrior.
One of the toughest in the game. Nobody wants to face Roy.
The work ethic was the best I've ever seen.
A man who was expected to be perfect or seen as perfect. I saw how hard that was on him.
Did you think he was an addict?
Yes.
Roy Halladay, the second no-hitter in postseason history.
He was tormented. His body was dependent on these medications just to function. ADD, depression, anxiety, paranoia. Roy had a lot of demons that he was trying to work on all at the same time.
What do you think he got out of the line?
Freedom.
One of my last texts were, be careful with that thing.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
A plane just now crashed up here in a place called Zant Bay.
Roy would want everyone to know that people are not perfect. We all struggle. But with hard work, humility, and dedication, imperfect people can still have perfect moments. Perfect. I hate that word, perfect.
I mean, I don't know how you're not instantly kind of drawn to whatever this story is or whatever we're going to learn about Roy Halladay. And we know the accolades. We know how much he accomplished over the course of his career. But Dasko, if there's one thing that we're kind of learning about Michael Jordan in The Last Dance is his ability to deal with the pressure, not just to win and perform on the court, but to be Michael Jordan all the time and the public idea and construction of that athlete, of that hero. And clearly that is a common thread and theme that you're kind of seeing in this upcoming film. As I said, it's titled Imperfect, the Roy Halladay story.
Yeah, Brandy Halladay, you know, I think is very strong. I just remember her speech at the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. And, she made that speech about, you know, we are all imperfect or flawed in one way or another. And it just makes a lot of sense. And, you know, he battled depression. His dad was concerned with him misusing prescription drugs. And
right.
2 years before his death, he was using lorazepam and he was in inpatient rehab from 2013 to 15. And so he struggled off the field with depression, anxiety,
and
paranoia.
And ADD because he's on amphetamines and stuff too. And just that kind of big ball of expectation. It just, when it's really hard for you to deal with everyday things and everyday problems, you can only imagine what it probably feels like to be a guy who has the legend that he had and just the way that he threw, the respect that he commanded on and off the field. It's no surprise that he would kind of fall down, especially with all of these circumstances that kind of fell in front of him. Sometimes it's just, that's just what happens because one unlucky thing, right?
Yeah. And you know, he did struggle some in the majors. He had a roller coaster ride. I remember early in his career, they sent him down to the minor leagues. They worked on his pitching motion, and he came back up, and everything was really corrected with Toronto. And as we know, he went on to greatness. But a lot of people might forget that he had injuries along the way, where 2005, he's going into the All-Star break. Kevin Mensch of the Texas Rangers hits a liner off of his leg. He breaks his leg. I mean,
that's right.
He had a lot of injuries throughout his career, and he struggled with that. And he struggled
right.
with, again,
and we know
just
what that,
trying
with the,
to be
with
perfect.
The painkillers and stuff, how that kind of just always pushes you, not necessarily towards pills, but there are definitely pills involved, but you're always in the doctor's office. You're always dealing with pain. You're always doing that. And so that just that exposure and that burnout from that, you know, it's going to be a very interesting film, and I'm excited to see this one. And what else kind of ESPN pulls out of their vault, because I'm sure they have, I don't know if they just have a treasure trove like of footage like they do for The Last Dance, but I'm sure they have footage for a lot of stories that
we'll
we
see
have
Kobe.
No idea.
Yeah,
Kobe.
We'll see the Kobe.
Right.
Probably a 10-part series, if not, you know,
right.
30 for 30.
Yeah, And obviously the sports are so much bigger than just the big major sports here in the USA. And that's why I like the 30 for 30 series. While most of those films are focused on the big ones, you know, it's eclectic. There's surfing, there's racing, there's all of that. There's sports. There's just so many stories and so many angles. And so we just wanted to highlight that one for you because I think it's going to be a big one. And obviously one that's very fresh in a lot of our minds here. We only have one more segment here left in our work week, but we're going to send you guys out with a good note. It's time for a cheers at 4:55-ish on the other side of the break here on the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Final few minutes of the Playmakers here just for the week, and we're going to send you guys out with some good notes here for our cheers with our good vibes. Lindsey Brown and Uncle Tony Cordasco hanging out here with you, but we got a little bit of a chunk of time. Dasko, what are you going to do anything besides, you know, the what you've kind of been up to the last few weekends? Because now we're starting to see a little bit of an ease in what the new normal has turned into. Some things are turning around. Are you going to celebrate or deviate from the normal routine at all this weekend?
No. You know, I went out and bought a pump for my basketball. So my goal of the weekend is to find a goal. I've got to find a basket to shoot.
You got to find a basket. You got to find a hoop.
Yeah,
you got to go buy one. You got to go buy
or
one.
Maybe a hula hoop.
I'm going hiking again tomorrow. I'm pumped. I got
nice.
New boots. Broke them in. We're gonna have a great old time. It's gonna be good because I'm a little sad because I haven't. I'm not home for a lot of holidays because I went to school on the East Coast. I live here now. But Mother's Day is coming up this Sunday, and we always like to send out everyone with some good vibes and some cheers. So I'll kick things off here, Dasko. We did a four of a kind, kind of centered around things that our mothers did that we appreciate. And I want to open that up a little bit because I'm cheersing all of the moms out there, but specifically my mom, Julie, my grandma, Darlene, who raised me as well, my aunt, Jody, my stepmom, Jennifer. And then, you know, like I said, everyone out there. We all have a mom. Whether they're with you here now or not in spirit. But Dasko, motherhood, I feel like it's one of those things you don't really know until you do it yourself. And so I can't fully articulate what it feels like to be a mother and all the things that come with that and the challenges. And so I wanted to thank them and everyone for the hands and the ears and the courage and the tears. Every bump and bruise, physical and emotional. We're all the product of our upbringing, the good and the bad. But at the end of the day, we're here, and I love you guys all dearly. So happy Mother's Day, and cheers to you.
And I'm gonna cheers the street artist Banksy. He's created an art piece called Game Changer. He has it on display in a corridor of a hospital in Southampton in the UK. It's paying tribute to the National Health Service workers in the UK. It shows a young boy playing with a superhero nurse toy or a doll, and there are figures of Batman and Spider-Man in a bin. And it's really impactful. The nurse is wearing a face mask, a white apron featuring a red cross. Her arm is raised as if she's flying, and so she's a superhero. He left a note for the hospital workers saying, "I hope this brightens the place up a bit, even if it's only in black and white." And the piece will later be auctioned off when the lockdown is lifted. The money raised will go to the health services charities in the UK.
Do you think we're ever going to figure out who Banksy is? And this is obviously a super cool thing for him to do. And he's, but he is one of those secret guys, you know, he's
a prolific artist. It's the mystique that helps to drive him. Yes.
I know, but do you think that we'll ever figure that out? Will we ever figure out who Marshmallow is? Like there's something to it, obviously.
It's a variety of people. Marshmallow, yeah, it's just whoever puts that marshmallow head on.
You don't I think it's the same person though. If you had like talent like that, would you go with a pseudonym like that, or would you want to be Dasko?
I would need a night off. Hey, by the way, can I just say on Monday's show, Richmond Webb, the former left tackle for the Miami Dolphins, who was drafted by Don Shula. We'll talk about Don Shula. We'll talk about him, Richmond Webb, protecting Dan Marino. That's coming up on Monday's show.
Some new excitement in Miami, too. We'll have to ask him about the new young quarterback that they have there on their roster. Number one. Number one, not two. Yes. That's awesome, Dasko.
Yes, exactly.
And then you're on the air, obviously, tomorrow morning, as you always are, for the Saturday Sports Beat, 8 to 9 a.m., right?
Yes. Kurt Bloom is the guest, radio play-by-play broadcaster for the Birmingham Barons. And we will talk about Michael Jordan's stint in Double-A baseball in Birmingham. And Kurt called the play-by-play of all the games that Jordan played in minor league baseball. He's still the play-by-play guy here years later in Birmingham. So looking forward to that conversation.
Oh, I'm sure he's going to have some stories that are not featured on The Last Dance, that are not featured but on the 30 for 30. Was it titled Jordan Rides the Bus?
What is it? The Bus, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Jordan Rides the Bus. I just watched that last night.
That has been, probably good. 10 years old already or so by now.
I just rewatched it because, you know, you have MJ, who's used to, you know, flying on private jets and being catered to. And now he's in Double-A baseball taking the bus in the Southern
League. You're roughing it.
You're definitely
roughing it. We'll have to ride the bus. But make sure that you guys come back and circle back right here on Monday, 3 to 5 p.m. Thanks to you, Dasko. Thanks to Mark. Thanks to Paul. And we'll see everybody in just a couple days. Stay safe. Be well. And sports.